Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about all the different stuff that's going on with UFOs and the paranormal. And God knows, there is so much to talk about. And I hope you all enjoyed our show last week. I brought on a guest. Her name was Donna Smith. She's a psychic counselor, and she was actually on the show a year ago. She's got amazing stories to tell of the psychic readings that she has performed, as well as some incredible encounters with ghosts and a really interesting encounter with an ET, a gray-type alien which came into her backyard. It was really a very interesting show. She's a delightful lady. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, remember all the shows are archived on the BBS network site, so you can listen to it at your leisure. But tonight, we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. I'm really actually very excited about our guest tonight because I haven't explored this topic on the show yet, and I've been meaning to for a while. As you know, if you listen to the show, it pretty much focuses mostly on the UFO phenomena with some paranormal stuff, but mostly UFOs. And one thing that people, you know, skeptics in particular, have often asked me is, how do you know that these UFOs flying around aren't our own, aren't our secret military aircraft? And, well, of course, I always answer, well, sometimes these things land and aliens come out and people are taken inside and they see ETs. But, of course, that's not always the case. A lot of encounters are simple sightings. And, in fact, it turns out that most researchers in this field, myself included, feel that a number of the craft that people are seeing are, in fact, our own military aircraft. It can be actually really difficult to tell the difference between the two, and that's going to be our topic tonight, UFOs and advanced secret military craft. Our guest tonight, Michael Schratt, is an aviation historian. He's been investigating this subject for many, many years, and in particular, the aspect of UFOs and secret military craft and how they relate to each other, and possibly reverse engineering of ET technology, which, of course, there's a lot of evidence that that is taking place as well. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Our guest, his name again is Michael Schratt, and we're talking about UFOs and military advanced aircraft. Michael, thanks for so much for coming on to the show.
Preston, thanks for giving me the opportunity to be a part of your program. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I'm really actually very excited because, as I said earlier, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who've been inside UFOs and a lot of people who've seen them and a lot of people who are studying them and the landing traces and, you know, what have you. But this is a topic that I really haven't explored at all on the show. And, you know, meeting you earlier, I knew instantly I wanted to have you on because, boy, the fountain of knowledge you have on this subject, I mean, it's amazing, so...
Well, what I'd like to do, Preston, time allowing, is I'd like to discuss 23 specific aircraft, and we'll try to get through as many as we possibly can. And I want to let the listening audience know that I'm not just making this information up. I do have documented evidence for a number of these aircraft. Specifically, I am a military aerospace historian. The primary focus of my research deals with classified black budget aircraft that have been developed within the military-industrial complex. And just a case in point, for example, I have in front of me a copy of the Detroit Free Press. So we have some documentation on this. This is dated February 8th, 1987. And the banner headline says, quote, "Secret Ledger Hides Military Projects. Pentagon Black Budget Has Tripled Under the Reagan Administration." And they also go on to illustrate a very detailed chart which depicts the classified black budget spending and different accounts within the Department of Defense. For example, for fiscal year 1981, the black budget was $0.6 billion, so just over $500 million. By 1988, that funding procurement rose to $9.122 billion. So you can see a tremendous increase in funding. Now, the federal spending by category, for fiscal year 1988, we spent $25 billion for education, $26 billion for agriculture, but the Pentagon's black budget was $35 billion. So the question is there a mismanagement of funding? Are we really spending our money wisely? And then finally, the Air Force budget, the total budget for the Air Force for fiscal year 1988 was $51.1 billion, of which $19.1 billion was the classified black budget funding.
1988. Well, geez, that's
yes,
more than 20 years ago. So it's now
that's
it's
correct.
Probably considerably
that's
larger.
Correct.
And considering our economy, I mean, this is an outrage.
Oh, absolutely! It has just grown exponentially from that point forward. We further have another document to reference this information, and this can be acquired by any American citizen, basically anyone living around the world. It is a document called the Research Development Test and Evaluation Programs R1. That's RDT&E Programs R1. And this is handed to Congress during late January of every year. And this is the Department of Defense toy list. And you can see in this document multiple different programs, and they give program element numbers, and they give a very brief description. But as you further go through this document, a number of these programs start falling off the radar screen. They don't tell you really any specific details regarding the program. For example, Seek Eagle. There's not much to be known about Seek Eagle. Senior Year Operations and Forest Green Operations. They don't tell you how much was spent, and they don't give you specific details on the program. So the bottom line is, you take the total amount from the knowns, and what you're left with are the unknowns or the black budget programs.
Wow, wow.
So there is a paper trail to this.
And the majority of our money is being spent on we don't even know what?
Well, we right there we know that it's well over $19 billion in 88, and now we're in 2009. That number, there are some estimates that number is over $400 billion per year. Just a tremendous amount of money is being spent on these programs. It's way above and beyond the call of duty.
It's more than everything else combined.
I mean, absolutely, without question, without question. It's definitely something that's above the boards, and see, these programs, they have no congressional oversight. We're dealing with three separate entities here. Number one is a black program. That's any program that has less than 5% congressional oversight. Number two is a deep black program. And the third and final category is what's termed a USAP, or Unacknowledged Special Access Program. And if you work in one of those projects and the president asks you for specific details regarding that program, your mandatory reply is to be, Mr. President, no such project exists.
Wow.
So that's the heading under the USAP category. Now, getting to the aircraft, I want to run through this list very, very carefully here. The Boeing Phantom Works Bird of Prey, the General Dynamics McDonnell Douglas A-12 Avenger II, Lockheed Senior Peg, Northrop Tacit Blue. I want to spend just a few minutes talking about the B-2 Stealth Bomber. Also, the 1982 to 1989 Hudson Valley Flying Triangle / Boomerang craft that was seen by over 25,000 eyewitnesses in the Hudson Valley area.
Right,
want to discuss
right.
DR-3A. Want to discuss Robert Bond's craft that he was killed in. RAF Boscombe Down, the U.S. Air Force Jet Flying Wing Disc Program via MacDill Air Force Base, September 1967. We're going to try to discuss the LTA Stealth Blimp, the TR-3B Astra, the Southern Illinois Flying Triangle Phenomenon, the East German Flying Triangle Recovery Crash Retrieval, Chris Gibson's Aurora Sighting, the TAV or Trans-Atmospheric Vehicle via Lockheed, also the TAV Boeing / Blackstar program, Project Q Quartz, the F-19, the Open House / Classified Military Dog and Pony Show that was put on at Norton Air Force Base November 12th, specifically the Pulsar, the Superstall, and finally the ARV or Alien Reproduction Vehicle.
Man, oh man, boy. All right, this is quite a story. All right, now let's begin. I mean,
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we should begin with the most recently declassified aircraft. Now, this is the Boeing Phantom Works Bird of Prey. It was declassified October 2002 under the former Bush administration. And this was a one-off technology demonstrator. 38 test flights were made between 1992 and 1999. It's approximately 23 feet wingspan, 47 feet in length. $67 million was the procurement funding for this aircraft. And if anyone wants to see this aircraft, it is currently at the Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio. And the concept being that this was the first aircraft to utilize low-cost disposable tooling, 3D virtual reality design components, and seamless composite aircraft construction. You'll notice, and all of this information, by the way, can be seen by the general public by my PowerPoint presentation that is on YouTube. So if you type in my name on the search engine on YouTube, all of these aircraft and everything that we're going to be discussing tonight is shown on that PowerPoint presentation. But regarding the Bird of Prey, this was the first aircraft that was absolutely practically seamless in design. Unlike the F-117 that had faceted flat plate technology, the Boeing Bird of Prey used the smooth contouring, and this was very helpful in reflecting away the radar waves so that the radar cross-section on this aircraft is very low. And so that's just a very brief overview of the Bird of Prey.
Wow.
The next aircraft is the A-12 Avenger II. This was a McDonnell Douglas General Dynamics program to be the replacement for the A-6 Intruder. This is a carrier-based all-weather attack aircraft. And the procurement funding for fiscal year 1990 and the amount of aircraft that we were supposed to have was about 590 aircraft. But by 1991, our good friend Dick Cheney canceled the program at the cost of $5 billion per taxpayer. So I propose that the U.S. Navy should cut a check to everyone and divide that up by the amount of citizens in the United States. We should all get a refund check because we've got absolutely nothing to show for the A-12 Avenger II. We just blew $5 billion on that program.
Which to them is chump change. I mean, it's nothing.
It's chump change to them. So here you can see the mismanagement of funding. Now, we've got people living in tent cities in Sacramento, California, in Washington, D.C., with no hope. No light at the end of the tunnel. There's no structured procedure for helping these individuals, but yet we'll spend $5 billion on a weapon system that had a black hole. We have no oversight on the funding, and we've got nothing to show for it, and it's a complete waste of money. So again, a great example of mismanagement of funding.
Right.
Now the next aircraft is the Lockheed Senior Peg. Some of your listeners may recall that the Northrop B-2 stealth bomber was unveiled to the public and rolled out at Air Force Plant 42, Palmdale. This was November 22, 1988. But prior to that, Lockheed also had a competitor to the Advanced Technology Bomber Program. Their project was called Senior Peg. And this was an overgrown F-117 with a inverted V forward swept tail on kind of a pole near the aft end of the aircraft. somewhat looking like an F-117, but a much larger version, and they had a tail boom with an inverted V-swept tail arrangement. This was a strategic long-range bomber. Wingspan was 152 feet. Range was about 6,000 nautical miles unrefueled. But, however, as we know, Senior Peg lost out to the Northrop B-2 stealth bomber. So Senior Peg was never built. And so that's the briefing on Senior Peg project. So as you can see as we're going through here, that many of these projects were never even built. And again, many, multiple millions of dollars were spent on some of these paper airplanes as well.
Wow.
Absolutely. Okay, now, Tacit Blue. Tacit Blue was the first aircraft built by Northrop to use a quad-redundant fly-by-wire flight control system with a side-scanning radar. First flight was in 1982 at the remote test site in Nevada, a.k.a. Area 51, and it was retired in 1985. So between 1985 and 1996, when this aircraft was declassified via the Clinton administration, absolutely no one knew that this aircraft ever existed. It remained a special access program for many, many years before it was declassified. It's now on display at the Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio. It's just an incredibly strange-looking aircraft, to say the least.
Well, and what was the name of it again?
This was the Northrop Tacit Blue program. It is also at the Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio.
Wow.
First aircraft to use a quad-redundant fly-by-wire flight control system. You'll notice in the PowerPoint presentation that Tacit Blue has a very similar forward nose section to the B-2, so you can see that they were already using the smooth contouring to reduce the radar cross-section. Northrop was certainly more advanced than Lockheed in that regard.
Very interesting.
Now, the B-2, spend just a minute on the B-2 program. Some of your listeners may recall that the B-2 cost approximately $2.3 billion per aircraft. Now, we had 21 of these built. One crashed last year in Guam, so we're down to 20 now. We currently have 20 of these aircraft. Originally, this was to be a high-altitude strategic bombing platform, but by 1983, the Air Force changed its mind, and they decided they no longer wanted a high-altitude bombing platform, but wanted a low-altitude bombing platform. That resulted in a wing redesign that cost the American public $1 billion just to redesign the wing. It's just amazing. So you've got the $1 billion for the redesign of the wing. You've got the $22.3 billion for research and development funding up to 1983. Northrop had nothing to show for this money that was spent at that time. So the question is, where did this $23 billion go to? And that's the question I also propose. Is there more to the B-2 stealth bomber than meets the eye? And I think there really is. And we have a reference for this. Aviation Week Space Technology, the March 9th, 1992 issue, indicated that the B-2 electrically charges the leading edge of the wing to reduce the radar cross signature, and then electrically charges the exhaust gases to reduce the infrared signature. And by way of a 1968 report from Northrop, they found out that when you electrically charge that leading edge, there was a resultant drag coefficient reduction by up to 68%.
Wow.
An absolutely massive drag coefficient reduction. So what does this mean to the American taxpayer? What does this mean to people who take the airlines, and can this technology be trickled down to the airline industry? In point of fact, this is what the Northrop engineers were upset about, that the technologies associated with what's going on within the B-2 stealth bomber were not being utilized by the airline industry. What would this mean to the airlines? If you could take a 737 and make this thing 60% more fuel efficient, would that be worth something to the airlines? I think so.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, the question is, then why aren't they doing it? Why aren't they
That's a very good question. One certainly has to do with the geopolitical change or shift that this would actually take place, because they could no longer charge you $400 for a round-trip ticket from New York to Los Angeles and back again. They'd have to charge you about $20 using this technology. It would be unprofitable for them to do it. They can still make money using these obsolete jet engines. And this is exactly what the Northrop engineers were talking about.
So is this effect, then, is this accepted by mainstream science and everybody knows about it, but it's just covered?
Well, it has been reported by Aviation Week. It has been reported in a number of different publications, and there's some very good evidence that to indicate that the B-2 perhaps is using an electrogravitic propulsion system. And we know that Thomas Townsend Brown's electrogravitic patent, this is patent number 3,187,206, when he was dealing with charged capacitors, he found out that when you positively charge one side and negatively charge the other, there is a resultant movement in the direction of the positive charge. And that may be what's happening with the B-2. Because when you actually do this, if you do what's proposed in this article, some very interesting effects take place. When you positively charge the leading edge and you negatively charge the trailing edge, you set up what's called a gravity wave, where there is a gravity well in front of the aircraft and a gravity hill in back of the aircraft. So in point of fact, this aircraft could technically shut down its own engines and ride on this gravity well just like a surfer rides on a wave.
Without fuel.
Without fuel. It's acting as an over-unity device. And now that explains perhaps how the B-2 can attain tremendous ranges unrefueled. There's been some leaks during the Bosnia campaign talking about just tremendous ranges that the B-2 is capable that are really off the books. So there's a little bit of a documentation there. So we know that there's probably more going on to the B-2 than meets the eye. Now that leads also to the Hudson Valley sighting. Now, as we said before,
Can I go right ahead? Are B-2s, are they available for examination? I mean,
they're based at Whiteman Air Force Base, Missouri, and there are tours. Every year, Edwards Air Force Base has an open house, and they usually have one B-2 on display inside the hangar. So you can certainly get up close to the B-2. You can't touch the B-2. You can't go in the cockpit. And what's interesting, too, is you will never, and I challenge any listener, to produce a photograph of the B-2 stealth bomber with the engine access panels removed. It doesn't exist. There's a possibility they may be hiding something within the engine bay of the B-2. Now, there's four engines on the B-2, and Townsend Brown invented what he called a flame jet generator that may be utilized inside the engine bay of the B-2 stealth bomber. That's going a little bit out on a limb, but again, no one has ever seen a photograph of the B-2 with the engine access panels removed. It doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist.
Incredible. Hopefully someday.
Yeah, someday we may know the answer. Now, this is interesting because before the wing redesign back in 1983, the B-2 had a single triangle trailing edge. But then after the redesign, we were left with what's called the double W platform that we see the B-2 that has now. So if you go to Edwards and you see the B-2 flying over or during large sporting events, the B-2 sometimes makes an appearance, you will see this double W trailing edge. But the original B-2 had a single triangle trailing edge, and this is exactly what was reported by over 25,000 eyewitnesses in the Hudson Valley area between 1982 and 1989. So there's a possibility that Northrop spent some of that $22.3 billion for R&D funding on a much more classified version of the B-2 stealth bomber. because the eyewitnesses reported that whatever was flying, and the government tried to explain it away as a group of crackpot ultralight pilots, whatever was flying over the Hudson Valley area in that time period, for one, it was massive. Number two, it was silent. Number three, it had a very interesting lighting pattern. And number four, it had translucent panels on the bottom. So, Preston, I pose this question to you and the listeners. Why would you need transparent panels on the bottom of a flying vehicle?
Well, that's a good question. I wouldn't even know. I mean, I'm just speculating.
Okay, you know, and again, I'm not making this up. This comes directly, and you can even see this on YouTube. They have a Unexplained Mysteries two-part segment on this. Very well done. You would need translucent panels on an aircraft that lands VTOL. If you had an aircraft that would take off and land vertically, you would need translucent panels to see your landing area. It makes all the sense in the world. So obviously this was a much more advanced version of the B-2 or something that fell along that line. Because if you're landing like a helicopter, you want to see your landing area. So that's a very good reason to have translucent panels so that you can see what's going on. The eyewitnesses also reported the structural cross beams inside the craft too. So you can see again that we're not looking probably at an alien vehicle here. We're looking at something that was built by taxpayers' money. I want to make something clear too though, is I'm not saying that all these aircraft that people are reporting are U.S. or man-made military vehicles. And as we discussed before, sightings date back to the ancient Romans and Egyptians thousands of years ago. So it's not consistent to say that everything is military hardware, but a large portion, maybe up to 95%, are in point of fact deep black classified military aerospace programs.
Well, you know, the Hudson Valley, I'm not entirely convinced that those were ours because of...
Yeah,
you know, there were a lot of reports of people, you know, being taken on board and seeing ETs and stuff.
We don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. I mean, it's still a debatable issue. One thing we can agree on, though, and I think we can all agree on this, that it wasn't a group of ultralight pilots. And anyone can debunk that. You know, the government, they really tried to pull a fast one on the public. If anyone is familiar with an ultralight, and I'm sure everybody is, you will know and you will notice that an ultralight uses a two-cycle engine, and these things are extremely loud, and you can hear them 5 nautical miles away. But the people who reported the Hudson Valley boomerang, they said it was completely silent and hovering. So we just wiped out that theory right there.
All right. Well, maybe the one that flew over Phoenix was one of ours.
That's a possibility. That's a possibility, absolutely. We certainly we want to keep that going, too. The next aircraft we want to discuss quickly is believed to be called the TR-3A Black Manta, also known as the Manta Ray. This was the aircraft that was used in conjunction with the F-117As during Desert Storm. Now, what's interesting to note, too, that this was a digital real-time reconnaissance intelligence gathering aircraft. It has a seat for one pilot, 2 canted vertical stabilizers, twin-engine design, a very low radar cross-section. And this was developed, also known as the Manta Ray, the Wraith, and it was part of the Air Force's covert survivable in-weather reconnaissance strike program. And it's believed that this was housed with the F-117s around 1982 at Tonopah Test Range. And so we do have something, and Aviation Week has reported on this aircraft. We do have something that flew with the F-117s during Desert Storm. It's still classified now, believed to be a Northrop design. And I did speak to a gentleman who knew a KC-135 boom operator who was refueling three F-117s during Desert Storm. And then, unknown to him, another aircraft came up and took on fuel, and that was one of these birds, one of these TR-38s, took on fuel. He peeled away and joined up with the others. So we do have some eyewitness testimony that there is such a bird. It still remains classified to this day. Other interesting point to note, too, is there's for every three F-117s, there is one TR-3A. So it's believed that there's approximately 19 TR-3As since 59 F-117s were built. That calculates out to roughly 19 Manta Rays.
Wow.
It still remains classified.
I'm looking at a sketch of it on the chart you gave me of the legacy of classified aircraft.
Oh, that's correct, yes.
Yeah.
That's correct, too.
I can see it, and I can see how people might mistake something like that for a UFO. You know, it's interesting, this chart you have also shows how radar signals are reduced and noise.
Oh, absolutely. This was orders of magnitude more stealthy than the F-117 was. Orders of magnitude. I also want to point out that practically all these aircraft that we're talking about are on the chart that I gave you, and I want to make an announcement that I am providing that chart free of charge to anyone who wants a copy of that. So all the contact information is basically on that PowerPoint presentation. So if anyone interested in getting a copy of that chart, it's certainly available to the general public.
All right. Now, let me just take a short station break here.
Yep.
Everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Black Budget Military Aircraft Classified Aircraft Historian Michael Schratt, who is, as you're listening, if you're hearing this, it's got an enormous amount of information on these black budget aircraft. This is a call-in show, so if any of you would like to ask a question of our guest, I'll give out the toll-free number right now. It's 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. Okay, Michael, sorry about that. I just wanted to make sure people knew who...
No problem.
...was talking. So, you were saying.
Okay, we were going on to the next aircraft, and this is fairly important. There was a general by the name of Robert M. Bond. Apparently, he was a bit of a showboatsman, and he died in the crash of an unknown aircraft on April 26, 1984. It has never been fully explained as to exactly what happened to Robert Bond or what type aircraft he was involved in crashing in. We still don't know. So just to repeat again, he died on April 26, 1984. It's believed that he was flying a MiG-23. That is one of the stories that was proposed. There's also some talk that he was flying an F-117, but I spoke to a gentleman who was on the crash investigation team for this particular incident, and he would not tell me what the aircraft was, but he told me it was not a MiG-23 and it was not an F-117A. So whatever General Bond was flying to this day still remains classified, even after so many years. You know, back in 1984, it's still a classified aircraft. So we don't know what happened to Robert Bond. And I have a copy of his official Air Force biography, and it just says a specially configured test aircraft. That's it. That's all we have.
Well, do you expect that sort of information will be released at some point?
Perhaps at some point, but apparently, for some reason, they still feel that it is a sensitive, compartmented program at this time, and they're not releasing it. They're just not releasing it. It seems strange.
Do you have any suggestions?
I believe he may have been flying a specially configured one-off stealth aircraft. Not the F-117, not the MiG-23, but something completely different. Now, that's just a guess, but it's just never been fully explained. It certainly is not talked about on his biography. They won't elucidate on what it was. So we still don't know after all this time. So that's just another quick.
Do you know how loud or how stealthy these aircraft are? I mean, how loud are they?
Well, the F-117 is a relatively quiet aircraft. The TR-3A Manta Ray, that is significantly quieter than that. There are some reports that some of these aircraft are using electronic canceling to completely wipe out even the low-speed capabilities, but even sonic boom suppression under the DARPA program. That's the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, the Quiet Supersonic Platform Program, which is basically a declassified program, but they were dealing with aircraft configurations that would minimize the supersonic shockwave. And so that's already been in the works. So it's clear now that we have aircraft that can fly supersonically without leaving a sonic boom footprint by massaging the shockwaves via electronic or electrogravitics just ahead of the aircraft. And so that's perhaps one way they're doing it now.
All right. Well, I mean, if we're looking at what are those earphones you can wear, noise-canceling earphones by Bose, they're giving us that technology. I can only imagine what they've got going on.
I mean, you've got to do something like that. You can't have a very fast tactical penetrator coming in at Mach 3 and leaving a huge sonic boom footprint so your enemy can track you. I mean, that'd be the dumbest thing in the world. You've got to come in low. You have to come in nap of the earth mission, and you want to come in hot, and you want to come in silent. And they've got to have that technology by now. If we're spending $300 billion in classified black budget programs, I'm convinced that they have figured out how to do that by now. So you would not even see or hear them coming. What? Not even close. That leads us on to the next aircraft. This is the RAF Boscombe Down incident that took place September 26, 1994. Now, I will make a point here that this particular event has never, I repeat, has never been talked about in American press. For some reason, Aviation Week has not really covered this event, but it was reported in Air Force's Monthly, March 1997 issue. This is the only publication that ever even talked about this. What happened was that there was a two-seat American stealth aircraft, not the F-117, believed to have been built by Northrop, called the Astra. That stands for Advanced Stealth Technology Reconnaissance Aircraft, serial number 90-2414. And on the application of military power, there was an incident believed to be a nose gear collapse. Both pilots did survive. They sat in a tandem configuration. The aircraft was towed back to the hangar. The aircraft was partially covered with a tarp, only covering the midsection, so the forward and aft section of the aircraft was visible. An eyewitness described this aircraft looking very similar to the Northrop McDonnell Douglas YF-23 that lost the advanced technology fighter concept, but the difference being that there was a triangular 75-degree swept wing configuration and two inward-canted vertical stabilizers. And that's all we know about this event. It's believed that the aircraft spent one night inside the hangar, and then, interestingly enough, a C-5 Galaxy flew from Air Force Plant 42 Palmdale, picked this aircraft up, and then flew it back to Northrop's facility at Air Force Plant 42 Palmdale, and that's the last it was ever heard of again, and it's never been printed in American press, but it's an actual event that did take place.
Wow. The secrecy, it's astounding.
Yep. So, again, the reference for this, and I'm not making this up, this is March 1997 issue of Air Force's Monthly. They did an absolutely beautiful full-cover 10-page article giving specific details on this, but again, it's a foreign publication. Aviation Week did not cover it. no American aviation publication even mentioned this event, but it's known within circles of this line of research that such an event actually did take place. I'll spend 1 minute or so on the LTA craft. This is the lighter-than-air vehicles. The reference for this comes from a 1976 McDonnell Douglas proposal for Omega Diamond Triangular and Circular Heavy Lift Cargo Transport. These are lighter-than-air vehicles. Some are over 600 feet in diameter. So the point being, the next time you go out at night and you see this huge 400 feet per side flying triangle, remember, it's probably one of ours via this 1976 report from McDonnell Douglas. They already had the proposals for these designs way back in the mid-1970s. 200 to 300-ton lifting capability with these craft.
What is it made of? Metal? Or is this like
a blend? They're a lighter-than-air vehicle, possibly using composite aircraft construction, perhaps a Kevlar exterior with a exoskeleton made out of a carbon fiber aircraft construction. So that may be what the interior skeleton of the vehicle is composed of. But it's very clear that there is such a aircraft or family of aircraft flying at this time.
It's interesting you say Kevlar, because that's something a lot of UFO witnesses tell me, how they describe the surface of these objects that they're seeing, that they don't reflect light. And Kevlar actually was quoted by, I believe it was the guy who wrote Day After Roswell, as being one of the technologies we got from UFOs. And at some point, I mean, when you're talking about these aircraft, you have to wonder, where are we getting this technology? I mean,
well, that is a good question, and we can certainly cover that perhaps a little bit later. But I do agree that that is something that was allegedly part of the trickle-down technology associated with that event. There's some new information regarding that has come out, and maybe we can get into it. Really quickly, I want to jump to the U.S. Air Force Jet Flying Wing Disc Program. Now, this is something that Jack Pickett had originally seen. He was a retired naval combat veteran, and back in 1967, he was the publisher of the NCO Club-based newspaper at the time. And he was driving down the Perimeter Road at MacDill Air Force Base, which is 7 miles south of Tampa. And when he got to the base scrapyard, he saw four of the most incredible aircraft that he had ever seen before. They measured approximately 20, 40, 70. The largest one was 116 feet across. All had tricycle landing gear. The smaller one had a crew of one with an air intake on either side of the pilot's compartment that tapered back to an extremely high vertical tail. So to make a really long story short, Jack Pickett was given access to officially stamped photograph of these aircraft in formation, in flight, on the tarmac, inside the hangars, and proposed a 10-page spread, which was titled Flying Saucers for Real! ! And just 24 hours before going to press with this particular story, there was an overflight of a more advanced vertical takeoff and landing from Avon Park, and this thing flew over downtown Miami at extremely high speed. And the next morning, when Jack brought this to the attention of the general at MacDill, they decided, quote, it would be in the better interest of the Air Force to delay publication, end quote. And the story died back in 1967. This was an original flying saucer program that was handled by the U.S. Air Force, and they were suffering from stability problems with this design, and that's why this particular model was being scrapped at MacDill Air Force Base. And from that point forward, this story has been expunged from the literature. It has not been declassified. Jim McAndrew, who was part of the Declassification and Review Board back in 97, actually back in 1995, he did declassify Project Silverbug, but he did not declassify this particular aircraft that was at MacDill Air Force Base. It still remains classified to this day.
Well, it looks just like a UFO.
Very similar to what people reported in the late 1940s all the way up until the mid-1960s. So this was a U.S. Air Force jet flying wing disc program that actually did exist. I spoke to another military official, a man by the name of Warren Botts. He was an Air Force pilot starting in the U.S. Army under the P-40s all the way up to the F-104. He saw the same aircraft at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Hangar Number 4, Bay E, back in 1966. So I had independent confirmation that there really was such an aircraft.
Wow.
In fact, I've got his letter right here, and I'll just read you the very, very ending. He walked into this hangar. He was amazed by the landing gear. There was an armed guard on the far corner of the hangar, and the armed guard came up to him, asked for his security clearance, and told Mr. Botts that he was not cleared to see this aircraft, and so he escorted him out the hangar. But then here's what Mr. Botts said in his final sentence in his letter. It says, quote, here he is talking about the armed guard. It says, he was very nice about the incident, and after showing my ID, advised me I was not permitted in this restricted area, so I left still looking back at this monster, he called it. End quote.
Wow.
So this was a huge aircraft.
Wow.
So again, you can see here that some of these can be mistaken for extraterrestrial, but in point of fact, it's our own military hardware.
Well, clearly, I mean, if we've mastered stealth technology with them being silent, that's one of the main features of UFOs.
And you'll recall that in April of last year, the F-117 was completely, it had been discontinued for a long time. They weren't billing anymore, but they have canceled the program. It's no longer flying, and they've already scrapped a number of the aircraft at Edwards Air Force Base, and the remaining aircraft, the wings have been removed, and they're in a somewhat of a armed classified facility at Tonopah Test Range. It's really not open to the general public, and they're being stored in that hangar, and they will never fly again. So that program is discontinued, and we already have something that takes its place, much better capability. And this was not the F-22. The F-22 still uses a afterburning engine, and you can hear this thing coming. But whatever is deep black that has replaced the F-117 is orders of magnitude more stealthy and even much more quiet than the currently discontinued stealth program in the form of the F-117A.
Wow. I'm speechless, honestly.
I also have a report from a retired General Electric engineer who was part of a program back in 1989. This is a side point here. He was part of a program to tow a B-52 from Air Force Plant 42 to Edwards North Base Complex, approximately 27 nautical miles in a straight line. And so this is an underground tunnel, and if everyone can picture in their mind's eye how big a B-52 is, they were towing a B-52 in an underground tunnel between Air Force Plant 42 and Edwards North Base Complex, and there was a parasitic aircraft sitting on the spine of the B-52, where the fuselage meets the wing joint, right at that area. And it looks somewhat like the X-20 dinosaur program, vintage 1960s, that was canceled by McNamara. Now, he said that while they were towing these B-52 through this tunnel, there were four connecting shafts that were linked up to the shaft that he was in. And he said that two of the tunnels ran north, and two of their tunnels ran south. He didn't know where they led, but he said that one tunnel that ran north was twice as big as the one that he was in. And he said that you could fit two B-52s side by side and still have 6 feet on either wingtip left over. So you can imagine how gigantic this tunnel really was.
Right. Well, it's my understanding that Edwards Air Force Base goes at least 20 stories down. There are reports.
I have heard that, too. Yes, I have heard that, too. And remember that most of the classified activity at Edwards takes place at the North Base Complex. It's not Dryden or where the tower is. It's at the North Base Complex. That's where the quote-unquote secret stuff is done there. And, yes, there has been talk about an underground facility, or a rather massive underground facility at Edwards. So I definitely agree with your comment on that, for sure.
Right, right.
Without a doubt.
Are we close to
right
the inspection vehicle yet?
Yeah, we can talk about
that.
Yep, that is connected to Edwards Air Force Base. Back on November the 10th of 1988, listeners may recall that the F-117A was declassified. A grainy picture was brought out to reporters. Now, 2 days after that event, we're talking November 12, 1988, there was an open house air show exhibit at Norton Air Force Base in San Bernardino, California. And the Thunderbirds were giving a flying demonstration at that time. But unfortunately, IFR conditions prevailed, and the lead Thunderbird pilot had to call the show off. So basically he said, "Gentlemen, we can no longer continue this demonstration. The clouds are too low. We are done for the day." So he basically canceled that, and all the Thunderbirds landed. But what's interesting is, concurrently going on as the Thunderbirds were flying, there was another exhibit taking place that was not open to the general public. Inside what's called the Big Hangar, it's actually called the Big Hangar at Norton Air Force Base, and this was a military exhibit to garner support for classified programs. We know that Congressman George E. Brown Jr. was present. Senator Alan Cranston was present. Both are now deceased. We also know that a number of high-level military Air Force brass were present at this exhibit. Now, what was there? We have an eyewitness who is a aerospace engineer who stated that there were a number of classified aircraft at this exhibit, one of them being an aircraft called the Pulsar. And this was approximately 100 feet in length, and this is reported in Aviation Week Space Technology, December 24th, 1990. So that's the reference on this. The title of the article is called "Scientists and Engineers' Dreams Taking to Skies as Black Aircraft." So it's 100 feet in length. It's 65 feet wide. It's unmanned. The entire aircraft is composed of heat-ablative thermal-resistant tiles that are taken directly off the space shuttle, so you can get an idea of what this thing looks like in your mind. It's completely black. In fact, the back end of this thing is scorched black, totally. And there were four NACA air intakes, two on either side of the center line of this aircraft that contained four turbojet engines, tricycle landing gear with the tires not made out of rubber like we know of today in our cars or on our aircraft. These tires were made out of a very interesting stainless steel wire mesh hose. And then on the lower section of this aircraft, there were 121 tubes. So the concept being is that the turbojet engines would take this aircraft up to approximately Mach 3. As soon as that happens, the leading edge of this aircraft, where there were control surfaces along the leading and trailing edge, the leading edge of this aircraft, when it was traveling at Mach 3, would start glowing red hot. And at that point, they shut down the turbojet engines, and they slam shut these NACA air intake ducts, making this whole vehicle aerodynamically efficient. And when that takes place, they would start introducing a modified liquid methane fuel with a boron-based additive directly into the superheated shockwave. And as soon as that happens, that fuel immediately combusted, exploded, and compressed between the superheated shockwave and the tapered afterbody of this aircraft, pushing it across the sky at about 12,000 miles an hour.
Whoa.
So that's the capability we have right now. And we mentioned the tubes below this thing. These were 121 launch tubes, each containing a 1/10 megaton warhead that can be launched in a 1/10 of a second. So if you take 121 and you multiply that by 18, that's a lot of cities that you could take out in the former Soviet Union. And that may be one reason why we won the Cold War, because when a number of Soviet generals saw the capability that we have, they basically threw up their hands and said, you know what, gentlemen, we are done. We cannot compete with the Americans. We cannot retrofit our radar ranges to track these aircraft. And even if we could, there's nothing we could do to stop it. There's nothing we can do about it. And so the Cold War was over, and that's basically the untold story of how we may have actually, in point of fact, won the Cold War.
Well, why do you suppose we're not using this technology, you know, in our current wars?
Well, we probably are. There's recent huge sonic boom activity in Southern California 2 weeks ago and then about a month ago. So there's evidence that we may be using this aircraft or an aircraft like this at that time.
I heard about that before, reporting an earthquake and all that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's been reported twice now. There was one last week and then one about a month ago. So two very current solid cases of a sonic boom signature that the Caltech seismograph readings have printed out as being not associated with an earthquake. They're called airquakes. And we know for a fact that the shuttle wasn't flying on that day and the SR-71 wasn't flying on that day. So they are reporting solid physical evidence of a Mach 3 aircraft traveling at extremely high speed, high altitude over the Southern California region, going over Catalina Island, and then going over Los Angeles, and then going directly into the remote test site in Nevada. You can draw a straight line, and they all line up. It's very interesting. Yeah. Also, when they were originally configuring this aircraft and doing the development for this particular aircraft, they had a problem transferring from one propulsion system to the other, because the external burning mechanism, there was a bit of an issue there. And on one particular flight, and this is an unmanned aircraft, they were flying this thing. They developed the problem just off the California coast. And approximately 15 minutes later, they sorted out the problem, and they were all already over Hawaii at that time. So within 15 minutes, they made it from the coast of California to Hawaii. That's about 12,000 miles an hour.
Good
Lord. So we definitely have a tremendous capability.
Well, you know, Michael, we just have like 2 or 3 minutes left, so I want to give you a chance to wrap up, you know, and tell our listeners what you think they should know about, you know, your research and, you know, how it affects them.
Well, I think that
more information as well.
Definitely. Preston, thanks again for giving me the opportunity to be a part of your program. Just to sum things up, I think, you know, since we're all taxpayers, we have paid for these aircraft. A number of these aircraft can be declassified without representing any threat to the national security, so we can dislodge a few of these aircraft. Now, I'm not calling for the declassification or release of all of them, but just the ones that do not represent a threat to the national security of the United States. So it would be nice to see what our tax dollars have paid for over the past 30 or even 40 years. And if anyone wants a copy of my chart that has all of these aircraft on it, just send me a self-addressed stamp envelope to 215 Lakeshore Drive, Crystal Lake, Illinois, zip code is 60014, and I'll be glad to send you a copy.
Awesome. That's very generous. Yeah, well, thanks, Michael, for coming on the show. It's amazing. Your research is so important. Boy, I just have not heard a lot of people doing the kind of work you're doing.
Thank you, Preston. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And I want to thank you again for coming on the show. You were absolutely fantastic.
Definitely a pleasure.
All right, everyone. Well, that's our show for tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Michael Schrat, and he's been talking about black budget and classified military aircraft. And if you've been listening, you can see that a lot of the UFOs people are seeing are, in fact, our own. We have the capacity to fly aircraft that are silent, that do vertical takeoff and landing, and that way beyond what has been publicly released. So it's been a very interesting hour. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And I hope you can join us next week when we bring on another exciting guest on UFOs and the paranormal on the BBS Network. Thanks again for listening, and have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.